He's part of Norway's new golden generation. A technical all-rounder, a born entertainer, and one of the most charismatic personalities on the World Cup tour, who turns resilience into art. Yes, you've got it, ladies and gentlemen. It's Mr. Cool himself, Atle McGrath.
Here comes Atle McGrath of Norway, and Norway take the lead. He knows it's good. And how good is it going to be?
Welcome back to Alpine Pulse Unplugged, the podcast where we go behind the results to discover the people behind the sport. I'm Nick Fellows, and today's guest is one of the brightest names of Norway's attacking Vikings.
It's just so much more than a race, so much more than a sport. And I think that anyone who kind of tries to say that Olympic Games or World Championships isn't anything special, they're not honest with themselves. I think about it every day. Standing sometimes in the start gates of World Cup races and being like, at some point, this is going to be me at the Olympics. The mix of like participating and then also feeling the Olympic spirit, that's like what I'm the most excited about. And then, of course, everyone wants to get a medal.
He's a multi-talented skier, a born entertainer, and one of the most charismatic athletes on the circuit. He's a three-time World Cup winner, a world junior champion, and an athlete ambassador. And one of the few skiers who can truly make you smile on and off the hill. From podiums to injuries, from comebacks to friendships. Here's the story of Atle McGrath. Atle, welcome.
Thank you.
It is such a pleasure. I've wanted and I've been looking forward to this podcast for a long time now, and I've been desperate to get this sit down. So here we go. Forgive me if we go here, there and everywhere, but you have such a wonderful story to tell. And let's start with that story. Where does the sense of being in a team come from for you? Because you are, when we watch you on the TV, if you're not winning, you're still there cheering for the rest of your teammates. You have almost embodied the story once again that the Vikings are a group to be wary of.
Yeah, for sure. You're saying it great. I mean, I've always loved being part of a group. I did a lot of team sports when I was younger, like playing soccer and handball and doing a bunch of things with my fellow, kids in my class and everything. So I've always loved being a part of a group. So being young, having big idols in Aamodt and Kjus, Aksel and Sundahl, Kjetil Jansrud, Kilde, all of these guys who I grew up watching, and they were embodying the attacking Vikings culture. And I never really knew what it was about. It's about when you're younger and watching it on the TV, but you don't truly understand until you get a part of it. And for me, actually, the moment that I understood what the attacking Vikings was for me was one of my first sessions with the team. It was, I think, in 2019, spring of 2019. And in Norway, you have this tradition when you are done with high school, you take on the red jumpsuits and you go and party in a bus for 3 weeks. And I'd just come back from doing that. So my shape was like, I was not in shape and not feeling great. But Kjetil Jansrud came to me on the first day and he sat me down and he was like, Atle, I just want you to let me know, I don't care how many World Cup wins anyone has. I don't care how many medals anyone has. I don't care how long anyone's been on the team. It's like once you're in this, you're a part of the attacking Vikings. And that was a pretty cool moment to get from Kjetil, who's like been one of my idols.
Wow.
And then to get that from him, like one of my first days on the team, that's when I truly understood like, wow, okay, this is going to be something special.
Now, a lot of people are thinking, that doesn't sound too Norwegian. You were born in Vermont, grew up in Norway, so you've got a bit of both worlds in you. What's the biggest cultural difference between growing up in Norway but being born in the USA? And what part of that mix defines who you are today?
I mean, being born in the US, I think I lived there for like 3 years, so I don't remember much of it, but I have such a big family in the States, and my dad, he's, American, lived 22 years in Norway now, still doesn't speak Norwegian. So I feel like we have a big part of like the American culture in our family. So it's a huge difference. I mean, the Americans are so open, love to talk, super ambitious about everything. And Norwegians, they're a bit more taken back, but so like genuine and really, really wish you all the best kind of. So it's a good mix. I feel like I get, when I feel like doing something a little bit crazy, I feel like I tap into my American side. And then when I want to do something that has reason with it, it's coming from the Norwegian side. It's kind of where I find my balance.
And for those of our listeners that don't know, your father was a really successful ski racer back in the 80s, Felix McGrath. When I was a young skier, we looked up to your daddy. Yeah, he was like Mick Jagger to us, you know?
Mick Jagger, yeah. No, he is probably the sole reason why I became an alpine skier, I would say. Because, you know, I never got to experience his career, but the way he kind of brought me up and my brother as well, and how just skiing became such a big part of our family. And then once I got a bit older and realized he was a good skier, I just looked up to him so much. You know, I really wanted to be like him.
Let's talk about that more as we get deeper into this conversation. Now that you're one of the, I wouldn't say veterans, but more experienced racers of the Norwegian Tech team, how do you see your role within that group, especially as athlete representative for the technical squad, which I think is a fantastic thing? How important is that to you?
It's very important. I mean, us on the tech team, we're like a small family. We end up spending a lot of time together. I think one thing that us Norwegians do that's different is that we have a mandatory 6-week training camp together in Oslo every summer. So the only months of the year we're not together is 2 weeks in May and 4 weeks in July. So it's like 6 weeks of the year we're not together and the rest of the time we're there. So it's really, really fun. And I pretty quickly went from being one of the youngest guys on the team. I think in the 22 season, I was the youngest tech skier. And then now in 25, I'm the second oldest. So it went so fast. It's really cool, you know, to be a part of the team, be, you know, the athletes rep for the tech team. And it's like, it's been really cool to, like, as I was talking about, embody the spirit of the Attacking Vikings. It's cool to feel like you're actively being a part of it.
No, it's fantastic. And every season, it seems like a new star rises within the team. How do you explain that? I mean, this sort of ongoing, it's like a machine. You turn it around again, there's another Norwegian champion. Oh, let's turn again. There's another Norwegian champion. The young blood that comes through so regularly is wonderfully impressive. How do you deal with that?
It's incredible. I mean, this year we have like a 2005 boy on our team. And that, like, I was always thinking people born after 2000 are young, but when you get to 2005, that's very impressive. So it's been really cool to see how we've been able to just keep producing good skiers. And I think it really comes down to, you know, the culture within the ski clubs in Norway and also the ski gymnasiums. And then I think also, or what I'm hoping is that the culture in the Attacking Vikings is, you know, really pushing them to want to get onto the team, because that's how I got inspired. Yeah. So it's awesome to see and just see how good they are. It's almost scary, you know, like showing up on training, maybe getting beaten by someone who's 5 years younger than me. I'm not used to that yet. So, yeah, so we'll see how that goes the next year.
But that's got to be what the benefit, and a lot of the smaller teams sort of yearn for that, is the young kids coming through, pushing you every season. It seems like the Vikings, the tech team in particular, recently take it to another level. That in-team competition has got to be healthy.
It's awesome. And it's really not just for skiing. We have competitions in everything we do, which is really fun. It doesn't really matter if it's card games or if we, you know, playing PlayStation or doing anything. But I think what really works is we have the mix of people who have been on the team for a while, and then we have the young guys coming in. So I remember when I got on the team, of course, being the youngest, you get picked on a little bit, which you're supposed to be. I think that's just healthy. So, you know, Kjetil and Kilda and all these guys, they would, you know, pick a bit on Lucas and I, and we would, because we were the two youngest at the time. But it was great because that's how we learned quick. And then when you're young, what you can bring is like epic intensity to every training, to every session, because you're hungry, you want more. And then, you know, now kind of that I've become a bit older, I feel like I can feel the same energy from these young guys. You know, it's fun if they do something that's, let's say we have a rule in the team that every minute you're late for something is 10 burpees. Yeah, so when some of the guys are 15 minutes late for a session, that's 150 burpees, and you have to finish them the day of. So that's I feel like that's a great rule. And then when you just see these guys doing burpees, and then, you know, I was doing them as well, that's like a fun way to teach them to be on time.
Yeah.
And then, of course, if we're late as well, then we have to do the same. So it's we have some of those things that just make it really fun to be older, because you don't make as many mistakes, but then you're still accounted to show up on time and, you know, do the right things.
And what is it that makes the Norwegian system so unique? Because there's academies in Austria, there's academies in Switzerland. It's not that you've got some magic academy potion. And the point is that whatever you're doing in Norway is happening year after year after year. What in your mind is the secret to success of Norway?
It's not one answer for this question. I kind of look at it two ways. One way I look at it is we have, you know, really good, passionate coaches from a young age, parents who are very, you know, what should I say? They're very involved. They want to be involved. They want to help. It's a lot of pro bono work. People just showing up because they love skiing, and it's a big part of the Norwegian culture. So I feel like kind of no matter what the winter sport is, people love doing it because, you know, Norway is covered in snow 6 months of the year. So that's kind of one way I look at it. And the other way is that the Norwegian team has never been very big. As of now, I think we're like 10 skiers on the World Cup team on the men's side. So the competition is pretty stiff to get onto the team. And it's hard because when it's tough competition, there will always be skiers who never quite get the chance, maybe, who deserve to get a chance, which is tough. I've seen many guys who I always thought could be good World Cup skiers never really get the chance. But it also really forces the young guys to work super hard if they want any chance of getting onto the team. So I feel like the guys that we kind of showcase on the World Cup and the Europa Cup, they are guys who truly deserve it because they work so hard for it and they actually take that step. So it's maybe harder, it's for sure harder to get to the Europa Cup level and the World Cup level. But once you get there, you know you're good enough because you're a Norwegian.
Yeah. I mean, that's wonderful. Okay, so we've got the roots, we've got the attitude. Yeah. Let's move on to the rise, the falls, and the comebacks of this legendary skier that's sitting next to me right now. Your journey to the top, it hasn't been a straight line. I think that's fair to say. Two serious injuries, two major comebacks. Let's start in Adelboden, 2021. I was heartbroken when on this day. You were right there among the best, fresh off the back of your first podium. I remember screaming the house down when you nailed it in Altabadia. And then your season was over in a matter of seconds. What do you remember from that moment? And how did you begin to rebuild?
That was a really tough moment and also like a bit weird looking back on. Because as you said, I came right before Christmas, had my first podium, which was awesome. And I actually never thought I was going to get one when I was younger. I was like, that was honestly something I didn't think was going to happen. So yeah. Coming into Adelboden, which is, you know, one of the biggest races, I had so much pressure on me just from myself. Because I felt like, well, now I have one. I have to get one every single weekend to prove I'm not just a one-hit wonder kind of.
Yeah, good word.
So I just stood there at the start and gave everything I had, and I for sure just pushed too much. So I remember crashing. I remember going into the net and like losing my breath and not feeling great, but thinking my mom's watching on the TV, I have to get up. I skied down, felt fine, took off my skis, and as I stepped out of my binding, my whole knee kind of slid out of place, and I realized something was wrong. And of course, that day was very weird because I went home, or I went to the hospital, got some help, watched Lucas crash even worse than I did in the second run. And then all of a sudden we were sitting there together. So, you know, flew home, realized the season was over, which sucked, but we were both very eager to get quickly back on it. And that period of like January to, let's say, yeah, here when the season started, it was very tough, but it was really fun.
Yeah.
I mean, like Lucas and I did a lot of things together. I got to experience a lot of fun things that I hadn't had done for like 20 years. But again, it was a lot of hard work and like kind of really feeling of missing out. I had just got the taste of what World Cup was really like, and then I was just missing out on everything.
And do you think having Lucas injured at the same time, I mean, I know some of the stories you can't tell this podcast, but the two of you going through the same rock bottom and then building it back. I mean, you race together as juniors. You're such close friends on and off the slope. But having to go through this injury with one of your best buddies, did that make the process a little easier? If nothing else, just having somebody to talk to about how shit this situation is.
Yeah, it for sure made it, like, it made a huge difference, I think, for both of us. And we grew really close during that period, for sure. It was really nice. But we were both like in the mix of very happy to be there together, but also none of us wanted to be in the situation. So it was hard, but it was fun. Actually, like when I look back at my first rehab period, it was pretty fun, actually. Can't say the same for the second, but the first one was like, that was like, just had good momentum and doing things together. I did think, you know, with anyone, it helps to be together, but especially with Lucas at that time was really great.
And when you came back 2022, you were both hungry, I would say, would be the best way to describe it. Okay, took a few races to get back into the swing and find the beat. But when the beat came, look at this here. My favorite story, your first podium on the comeback year, second in Schladming, exactly the same as your dad.
Mm.
And your dad was second to Tomber, I believe.
Yeah, correct.
In 1988.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, that was a fabulous story that we all enjoyed. But then came the wins. Two back-to-back wins at the end of the season that told the world McGrath was back in business.
That whole period was crazy because I broke my thumb on New Year's Eve. So I was missing out all the first races of 2022. And I thought I wasn't going to qualify for the Olympics. So Schladming was actually the last race before.
Yeah.
And finishing second there from like starting outside top 30, having, you know, no expectations. That's still the most emotional I've ever been in my life. I mean, I just cried and cried and cried and I couldn't stop crying because it was felt like so much pressure was off my shoulders. And then went to my first Olympics, didn't go great, but the experience was awesome.
Yep.
And then came the wins after the Olympics where I found like peace with I was at peace with myself that I'd done an okay season and was just hoping to finish strong. And yeah, then to be able to go and like win back-to-back World Cup races, I thought, you know, first, because I was close in Schladming, I think it was 300s behind Linus Strasse. Yep. But I was like, that's probably the closest I'm ever going to get at some point. So to actually win World Cup races was just, that whole period was amazing. I just had so much fun. I wasn't thinking much. I was in like the classic flow state. And it was just, yeah, I was just young and not stupid, but kind of, you know, just, I didn't think much. I just absolutely skied my heart out every race and that was really cool.
I love this dad story in Schladming. Those two wins basically told the world that you were back from injury and you were the player that we all expected. Yeah. But when you were second in Schladming, which was the same result for your dad in 1988, what did he say to you on the phone?
He told me, now we're just as good. Now you match me now, was like kind of what he told me first. But then, you know, he's always been amazing because he like supports me the same no matter. He's just as excited if I podium or win a race or if I finish 25th. I get the same support from him, which I've always really appreciated. So it was one of those moments, you know, he joked a bit with me and told me like, this is awesome and you deserve it, but like, we also need to keep going. You know, it's lots of great things coming up. So I feel like it's always been a good balance there.
That's lovely. I just wanted to ask that question personally.
Yeah.
I just wondered what he said. Let's go on to the next season whilst we're running through them, because this is again, another one of your challenges. Podiums are there. Adelboden, skiing well, and everybody's got their eyes on you at the World Championships for 2023. And then the worst thing you could possibly imagine is an ACL tear. I've got to ask a tough question here. Why the hell did you ski that Super G?
Well, I'd started experimenting a bit with speed that year, or I've always skied speed. So when I was younger, I did every single event national championships, every single event junior world championships, always loved doing speed. So I showed up at the start of the season with no expectations. And, you know, I finished fifth in Beaver Creek in my World Cup debut in speed.
Yep, I remember.
Which was so surprising. So, you know, I was still training a little bit, but I came into the World Championships and I was like, I'm going to race every event except for downhill. That was like, that's my plan, you know? And I stuck to it. So coming in, I was really excited. I felt like I was skiing better and better. Those 2 days, because the 2 days before we had the Super Combined in the World Championships, I was so passive in the Super G part of it. So I was finished like 12th in the Super G and then I skied a decent slalom, finished fifth, missed out the podium by like a 10th. So I told myself, no matter what, I'm just going to get after it in the Super G. And yeah, then just worst case scenario happened. I don't really remember what happened because it happened so quick. I just remember hitting the net at like 100 kilometers an hour and feeling immediately that something was wrong.
Yeah, I think you were going a bit faster than 100 kilometers per hour.
Probably, I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah, I remember it being closer to 120. ACL tear, and we're back in rehab again. At least you've got the experience of having to stop and start again. But this one must have hit you harder because you were becoming one of the major players that could win in everything. That fifth in Beaver Creek, Super G, I believe, possibly justified that start in the World Championships. But to have to go back to zero for a second time, that must have been one of the major blows of your career.
Yeah, that was for sure one of the major blows. I mean, to sit there and realize, like, even before I took any photos or any MRIs, I realized, like, I'm screwed. I'm going to be out for a long time was my initial thought. And that's by far the lowest point I've probably ever had in my career and maybe even my life. That whole, the next 3 months after, just because I was alone much more in that period. And I'd experienced it once before, but this time it was like much more severe. And the ACL can take up to 12 months to get to be race ready again. So I really, really struggled actually mentally and like physically, of course, but mentally as well during that period. It was like 3-4 months of just like grinding, really just having to be super patient. I was at home watching races on the TV. You know, it was watching my teammates win races, watching Henrik win the World Championships, Lucas win the Slalom Globe. It was like all things that, okay, maybe I wasn't going to win the races myself, but I wasn't there to experience those moments with them. And that was what like was eating at me. I just couldn't believe that I was missing out on these moments that these guys are going to remember forever. And I wasn't going to be a part of it. So I really struggled for a lot of months. Luckily, I had, you know, great people around me. I really had a good support system at home, which made like the process as easy as possible. But it was still just really tough.
So another comeback is on the cards. Mm. But you now know how to come back.
Yeah.
You now know how to go from zero to hero. And we are into the 24 season. It doesn't take long. Adelboden, Wengen, two back-to-back podiums, giant slaloms in Aspen. Where did the motivation come from there? Was it the experience of having it done once before, or were you just determined to prove to the world that you were not done yet?
It was for sure a mix. I mean, I knew I just, my biggest goal was to just make it back racing. I was telling myself when I was injured that no matter how bad a race can get a season, if you DNF, if you screw up, it's not going to be as bad as this. So just get back to doing what you enjoy. I took a lot of learning from the first time I was injured. The first time, you know, I was new, I was taking a lot of tips and doing a lot of, you know, just kind of listening to the recommendations. But the second time I was injured, I decided to do what I believed was best. And that also applied to my skiing. Because that before I tore my ACL, I was moving a little bit away skiing wise from what I truly believed was going to like be my style of skiing and my beliefs. So when I got injured, I decided like for the rest of my career, pretty much my life, I'm going to do things that I truly believe in. So that's what I brought into the season. I just brought, you know, I tried to build some kind of momentum, which was really hard when you're starting from zero. And just slowly I was chipping away, climbing up the rankings a bit and getting into it. And then to be able to, stand on the podium in Adelboden, Wengen and just start fighting for wins again was really, really cool. And I felt like it came from being so decisive and just really trusting my gut more than I had ever done before. So I feel like that season was, you know, probably the season I've learned the most from. And it really like shaped me in a good way to be injured.
I mean, experience is the name of the game. And sure. And I think that season you started to show that your experience from the good and the bad was starting to come through. Your skiing started to look truly definitive, truly your style, your place. And it came together beautifully. And of course, you managed to stay injury free. So we come into this season right now that we've just finished in 2025. And then we're starting to get this superstar that we wanted back. You kick it off with a third place here in Solden. You're back on the podium. You're back to your winning ways in Wengen. And you crown it off with a silver medal in those World Championships. How would you sum up 2025? And does it sometimes grind a little? Because this is the form guide that we could have had in 2023.
Yeah. No, I think what I really learned last year was the consistency in alpine skiing, which comes to being consistent in training, off skis, on skis, mentally, and also just mentally being at a good place was what led me to a lot of good results. I had a good prep last year, came into the season super relaxed, which was different because normally here in Solden, I'm just so stressed. I used to hate Solden. It used to be like my least favorite race. And then last year I came and I just had this, you know, kind of the the butterflies were there, but the big like lump in my stomach was gone, which normally I'd been there with all the anxiety and everything. So to just kind of let go and race and get on the podium that first race was really big for me, because I kind of beat some demons, inner demons, in some ways. And then I was able to just keep that momentum going really well throughout the season. And I was skiing a little bit safe before Christmas, I would say. You know, I had a lot of podiums, but I wasn't winning races. And then I tried to step it up after. You know, I blew some huge chances, like in Madonna, where I was leading by a lot and everything. But to be able to win again after almost 3 years, that was incredible. And then also the World Championships was, you know, all of those moments were just something that I'll remember
forever. You waited 3 years in Wengen, you won your third victory. And that's a tricky slope, that Mandiken.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes some conquering.
Yeah. No, Wengen is tough. And I was coming off three DNFs in a row, because I was leading in Madonna and I straddled, and I was leading in, and or I was winning at the last split in Adelboden. And then I went out and I took a split and fell on my face in the GS. So it was just kind of everything that could go wrong went wrong. But the only thing I was telling myself is, I've fell in Adelboden before and I got injured and missed the rest of the season. And this time I'm actually healthy. So I showed up in Wengen, skied the first run, and I was just like, I'm tired of leading World Cup races now. I'm just going to be like fifth place after the first run, so I don't need to feel the pressure of actually leading. And that didn't work out, because, you know, I was in the lead after the first run. But I think the mentality of just not caring which position you were going to be in was what made me ski so well. The thing about Wengen, which maybe people don't know, is at the start, there's a speaker right into your ear. So you hear every single thing that happens. So I watch everyone, there's a screen, but you know, there's a screen and you can just watch what you want to. But when you get it in your ear the whole time, you're trying to go through the course and you just get it pushed in. It's so hard to
concentrate. Yeah.
And I heard Timon, who was 10th after the first round, took the lead. I heard he kept just staying in there. I heard people were making mistakes. I didn't know where they were making mistakes, but I just heard because the speaker was like, oh. And then Henrik was second, and I heard he came into second place. So then all of a sudden, I hear the speaker, okay, I'm in the lead. I'm at the start. Timo's in lead, Henrik second. I have a second to go on Timmy, and I have a chance to get a full Norwegian podium sweep. So it was like the feeling of like standing there and having so much responsibility. It was just added on. So when I skied there, I don't remember much. I just remembering bringing all the experience I've ever had in a race, bringing that and coming through the finish, seeing the green light, and then pretty much seeing Timon be happier than I was yeah. Like, just, it was amazing. So that whole experience was like just truly incredible.
You skied magnificently. You really did. It was such an honor and a pleasure to be able to commentate that race. That Norwegian clean sweep was beautiful and historical, but you were the shining star of that race. It was brilliant. And to be honest, you could see in the start gate before you left, we get this close-up face shot, you were wetting yourself. You looked so nervous. And it was almost as if not for you, because yeah. We've seen you throw it away and pick it up, dress yourself down and still be wonderfully entertaining. It's as if you did not want to let Henrik and Timon down for a shot at the clean sweep.
Yeah, that was like really going through my mind. And it's so hard, because from the second that Henrik comes into the finish and is second and the chance is there, you only have like 2 minutes to process everything. And I was just standing there, you know, absolutely so stressed, not really knowing what to do with myself. And just, it's like, how are you supposed to perform when you have all those thoughts going through? And then also thinking, okay, it's 3 years since I won my last race. I've been really close. I haven't been on the right side. Like, it felt like now or never. And that was kind of the only thing I told myself, was like, okay, well, this is the chance I'm going to get, like, for now at least. So
beautiful.
I have to take it.
Saalbach World Championships. Silver medal, delighted or frustrated that it was not gold?
Any athlete, if they don't win, they're going to feel, I hope they feel some sort of frustration. But for me, the World Championships, I've had a very special relationship with it, because in 2021, I missed it. And then in 2023, I crashed in the second event. So I've never, before Saalbach, I'd never gotten to ski slalom or GS in the World Championships, which are my two best events. So I came into those championships knowing I had four chances, because I did the team combined and the team event. And when the first two didn't go well, I was like, at least I have my two best events. And I would say kind of for me, the whole turning point in the World Championships was the second run of the GS, where the first run I was super passive. And the second run, I gave it everything I had, skied fast, made a lot of mistakes and finished 10th. But I was like, wow, I really actually did it. So in the slalom, being third after the first run, I mean, talking about being nervous in Wengen, I was way more nervous in Saalbach in the second run. Because when you're at the start, you see the finish area.
Yeah.
And you're just looking right down into the bowl of people. And I mean, I was so nervous, I barely could click into my skis. It was like my legs froze and everything happened. And it was like a reaction. I was almost feeling like, oh no, not now. Like, why is this happening to me now? But then to be able to just breathe. Timmy was in front of me. I think that kind of helped because he normally starts in front of me on training because we go by the World Cup start list. So he was in front of me because we were third and fourth. So I was just telling myself, just ski, it's just training, you know, trying to take away the seriousness of the situation. But and to come to the finish, have the green light, and then to see Loic come down right after and just beat me by 2/10, that was, I just felt like, oh, okay, well, That's just how it's going to be. So
yeah. You put that very politely.
Yeah, exactly. But to get a silver medal and to get an individual medal in a World Championships is, again, like I never thought I was going to be on the podium in a World Cup. I never thought I was going to win a World Cup. I for sure never thought I was going to get a podium in a championship. So to get a silver was just, it was just awesome. And especially with the tough history I had missing the two last ones, it felt like I was like, I wasn't due. But I was due to be able to race and then to grab, take the chance and actually grab it was what I'm left with.
From my perspective, a spectacular performance again and 0.02 of a second is, you know, a blink of an eye. It really is. We'll move on. I want to come to the Olympics at the end of this chat because I think your silver medal in the World Championships now puts you in a place where you're ready to rumble at the Winter Olympic Games. But let's go to Icy Slope. Icy Slope is when we ask a friend or somebody that's close to you to ask a question.
Okay.
I'm going to play you this little video and you've got to answer as best you possibly can. This is from a pal of yours, River Radamus.
Oh, River, really?
Hey guys, River here, long-time listener, first-time caller. Atle, big fan of your work. One thing I've always admired about the way you ski is how committed and hard-charging you are regardless of the circumstances. Wengen second run last year, in the start, you seemed so calm given the circumstances and the way you skied, it seemed like you knew that the race had already been won. So question for you, where does that confidence come from? And if it's manufactured, how do you do that? I'd love to know.
I'll take the answer off the Real for sure. River, we'll have a chat like one of the next days for sure. Now that's great. I already spoke a bit about it, but confidence in alpine skiing it's tricky because alpine skiing is a sport of very small margins and you never really know what can go wrong. There's no guarantee ever that you're actually going to finish or win or anything. But yeah, as I said, like standing in the second run in Wengen, as I talked, you know, knowing the circumstances, knowing there was a chance for a podium sweep, my first win in 3 years, it was really trying to tap into all the experience I've ever had. It was in 2024 in Wengen, I lost the race to Mander Feller from the last split and down. I was 3/10 ahead and came a 10th behind in the finish. So that was something I was really focused on, like finishing strong even before the race started. And I was just trying to piece up the race, make it super simple for myself. Like this section, I'm going to ski fast. This section, I need to be smart. And this section, I'm going to get after it again. So trying to just really break it up, be like, what am I afraid of? And what am I ready for? That was kind of my whole mentality going into it. And then while I was standing there and I, you know, when you're in the heat of the moment, it's really hard to remember all those things. But I just kind of, I've done the preparations up until then. And when I'm in the start gate, I'm just telling myself, don't think, don't think, don't think. And yeah, don't think.
Yeah.
That's like the only thing I'm thinking about, which is just to not think.
Is that confidence then become almost a state of mind, an autopilot.
Yeah.
Zrinka Lucic was talking about it yesterday, and you mentioned it briefly earlier, this sort of free-flowing state where your body says, it's okay, Atli, I'm taking over now, we got this. And it's something that it's very difficult to analyze. River's hoping he can go and buy it in a sports shop, and that's not there either. But it's something where all the stars align, and I knew you'd won that race by gate five. It's fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, the flow state is very special. When you get into it, it's incredible to be in because everything's easy. But I think that the true confidence lies in the moments where you're not comfortable, when you're standing there and you're not feeling great, because maybe you don't, I mean, alpine skiing, there's a bunch of things. You physically, maybe you're not great. Maybe you're mentally off one day, or your equipment's just not good for those conditions. To those days, be able to dig out something special is what I think truly makes you a great competitor. So I felt like I had a lot of things lined up in Vengen. I had the equipment lined up. My skiing was there. Partially my mental space was there, but not 100%. So to then like mentally win the battle and just go for it in the moment when I felt most pressured was where I took out the extra thing. It was a little bit like, what's the worst? I knew what the worst was could happen, but again, it was like, if I don't take this chance, I'm going to regret it for the rest of my life. A bit of a thinking like that.
Great words. And River, thank you for the questions. Let's go to the third part, beyond the gates. Let's step off the slopes for a second. You're known for your creativity, humor, authenticity, whether it's a new beard or a funny post or a crazy idea. You're not afraid to be yourself. Has that ever been misunderstood? Or do you think that honesty is a part of your strength?
I've very rarely been challenged on who I am. I was very unsure on kind of who I was when I was younger, especially when I went to like high school and a part of that. It was kind of before I started going to ski gymnasium. I was struggling a bit with who I was because I loved skiing and I really wanted to talk about skiing and be skiing. And I was like one of those kids, but I didn't have friends in my school who necessarily shared those passions with me. So I always felt a little bit out of place when I was younger. And that makes it tough to really be yourself and really like, what should I say, do what you truly want to do. But then once I started skiing more and got into ski gymnasium and got surrounded by people who love skiing, I felt like that became a part of me. And I mean, it's so easy to say like, oh, we want to get to know the people outside the gates. But for me, alpine skiing is such a big part of my life that I feel like I'm able to bring who I am into skiing. I feel like I always show like who I am on races or on bib draws. And like, I just want to do the things that are me, no matter what. And then I honestly almost never get any bad feedback. The only thing I got was when you guys made me freestyle rap on the bib draw in Madonna. I was so bad. Then I got a bunch of, mostly from my teammates. They can believe I did it.
And oh,
I still get sweaty thinking about it. But other than that, it's been pretty good.
No, and please don't stop. Okay. There are fans all over the world that love the McGrath style. They really, really dig it. Let's go to another story. When Lucas announced his retirement, partly because he didn't feel understood in Norway, what went through your mind? And how did you take the news that someone that you've related to, been through so much together, to what he was feeling? It was a very interesting period in sport and obviously a tricky one for him. And I've often wondered how you felt about that whole process.
It was very, very special, the whole process. I mean, because about 2 weeks before he announced his retirement, we were at ski camp in Norway. And we actually sat down and had like a talk for 2 hours or something, just in general about everything. And he aired that he was just really not feeling happy. And this was before I knew he had any intentions of not continuing to ski. That was like never in my mind. But when he called me, because it was coming back from injury, I wasn't here. So I was home and he called me at like 11 at night, the Friday before the race. When he broke it to me, I couldn't believe it, honestly. I was so shocked. The first question I actually asked him was like, can't you please just ski for Brazil so we can't continue skiing together? Was my first, actually the first thing I told him. And he was like, no, I'm so tired. Like, I can't at the moment. Like, that's what he said pretty much. And yeah, those following days, I was really sad. Like, I cried a lot. It felt like someone broke up with me pretty much because it was kind of like,
you know, I felt like that as
yeah,
well. Actually,
it was really sad, honestly. And it took some time. And once Solden was done, he came home to Oslo and we met. And that was really nice. That helped a lot. And I think then I realized that no matter kind of we're not going to be teammates anymore and we're not going to ski together, but at least we have a friendship that's built on something that's a lot more than skiing. I mean, we've been through a lot of tough stuff and great times together since we were like 12 years old. So I at least had the good feeling that we're going to still be great friends. So it was weird. It was really sad. And then, you know, you come to terms with it. And then funny enough, you know, the show goes on. Like I went back to ski camp and it was weird not having him there, but I just had to keep focusing on myself and my skiing. So it was a bit of a, weird situation, but yeah, it was special.
And there's a happy ending. He took your advice.
Yeah, he did.
And a year later, he's racing for South America down in Brazil.
Yeah. Maybe it's just because of me. I don't know. Maybe that's the reason you've switched to Brazil. No, for sure not.
You've said before, Atlee, when I have fun outside the slopes, I do better on them. What does fun mean for you these days? And what keeps you balanced?
That's a great question. I think every year for every year that goes by, I need to do more things that make me happy outside of skiing. Because I always love skiing, but at points it can just get too much. So I have a lot. I've always had a lot of different interests, and really liked doing a lot of stuff. But I always come back to is like my family, my girlfriend, and my friends, and the people I just don't get to see that much during the season. They're always the people who are going to bring out, you know, the best in me, I would say. So I just love spending time with them. It really doesn't matter what we do. And then I really love traveling. This year I got to go to Sardinia for the first time, which was awesome. I always try to go somewhere new for a week every year. I went to the US this year and visited my family. We had a family reunion for the first time in like 10 years. And that's stuff that just really, you know, is good for my heart and good for my soul, if you can say that stuff.
Yeah, you can. That is great words, really great words. And of course, you're into many sports, golf, mountain biking, basketball, tennis, even cliff jumping, I've heard. What's the one that makes you feel most alive when you're away from skiing?
Well, what I relate to the most when it comes to skiing is golf, because it's such a mental game. You're out there for 4 hours and the only thing you're battling is your mind. So even though it's just great being out there without cell phones, without, you know, any like technology for 4 hours with friends is great, but the mental part of that. And then I don't do it as much now, but as you said, I used to do a lot of cliff jumping before. And I actually joined the world championships in Dutz 1 year, which is where you jump out and then you land on your stomach from 10 meters. So I joined the qualifiers. So I didn't qualify, but I had some friends who we used to do that quite a bit. And I would say those moments were for sure the moments I felt the most alive. But now I've become 20, I'm 25 now. Maybe my mind's a bit more developed to know that jumping from 10 meters landing on your stomach isn't the smartest for an alpine skier. But I still always love doing things that, you know, just make me feel alive. So yeah, it's a big, good mix. And we always do a lot of different things during summer. So any sport will always make me feel great.
You've already touched on your family and your partner, a huge part of your life. And we see that in your posts and the way you talk about them. Tell us a little bit more how you balance that connection. You said it's difficult on the road. Do you miss home? And what do you say to those who complain about always being away from home? What are your advice on finding this family work balance and relationship?
It's always going to be a bit tricky for sure. I think when it comes to my family, because, you know, my dad was a skier and we've always had skiing in our blood, it's never really been a question about being gone or any priorities. I think I've been very lucky to grow up with a brother and mom and dad who just understand it no matter what. So I've never had to feel guilty or negotiate or do anything with them, which has just been awesome. So I miss them a lot, but I know that they're doing well, doing their things, and they know that I'm having a good time, so it doesn't matter. And then when it comes a bit more to, you know, my relationship and my friends at home who, you know, I've of course grown up with as well, that's where I feel like the balance becomes a bit tougher. Luckily, my girlfriend, she's super understanding, but she's had to learn as well. You know, she didn't come from a skiing family and kind of learning and seeing how to do things the right way. And also for me to prioritize being with my friends who I've grown up with, that's like the area where I kind of struggle the most. So what I've figured out is it all comes down to you always have the time for what's important to you. You know, it's like you can make anything happen if you really want to. And that's kind of where my head is at. It's like if I'm tired or I have 2 days at home or anything, I'll prioritize doing and meeting the people that, you know, I really care about. So I would say that's kind of the only tip I have is you do have time for what's really important to you.
That's wonderful words, really. You're also an ambassador for, do I pronounce it MOT or Motinoy? MOT, I think.
MOT, yeah.
And Active Against Cancer. Mm. That's a big statement for someone of your age. Why is this so important to you? And what message do you want to send to younger athletes with regards to these wonderful associations and charities that you're working with?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, MOT, which it stands for courage, is the direct translation. They target, you know, younger kids to have courage to like be yourself and really have your beliefs and stick by them. And it's amazing. Like I've gotten to do some things with them where you do like, you do, it's almost like, it's not like homework, but you sit there and you go through with them and you're talking about like being very honest about challenges and seeing. And like one of the, my favorite tasks that we did was you put up a football team and then you put in your key players. Who's your key players in your family? To realize. And then you see some people have a lot of players and some people only have one, which is very, you know, very touching when you're sitting there. So it really shows that like the work they do, being there, helping them, it's really incredible. And to kind of be a part of that is always really fun. And then I'm active against cancer. You know, I've had cancer in my family. I think everyone has had someone close to them fighting it, and to just see what they do as well, which is just give anyone who has cancer a great chance of having a good life and fighting it the best way they can, is those are just values that I really stand by and things that touch close to me.
Beautiful. I mean, really beautiful. Let's look ahead. We've got to talk about it. It's coming. We all know it's coming. Mm. You've had podiums, you've had wins, you've had comebacks, you've had world championship medals. But of course, the big one this season is the 25th Winter Olympic Games, Milan Cortina. And of course, the men are racing over in Bormio. How much do you think about them? Be honest here. And what would it mean to finally stand on that stage? Not the stage of participation, but the stage of taking a medal.
I think about it every day. That's my honest answer. Every day it goes by. And it's been there every day for maybe a year, half a year. I was thinking about it last season as well. I was standing sometimes in the start gates of World Cup races and being like, at some point, this is going to be me at the Olympics. So it's always been there for sure. And what I really love about the Olympics is it's every fourth year, which is makes it special, but just it's just so much more than a race, so much more than a sport. And I think that anyone who kind of tries to say that Olympic Games or World Championships isn't anything special, they're not honest with themselves. It's truly amazing. So I'm very excited. We've done some skiing there, tried out the Olympic slopes. They look really cool. The GS looks long. So I've done a lot of physical work this year to get ready. And I'm just super excited to like really get the Olympic experience. Because in Beijing, it was COVID. We did COVID testing every day. You were either in your room or you were eating at the cafeteria where they had like plexiglass boxes you had to sit in. So it was just, you couldn't get to know other people the same way as I feel like the Olympic spirit should be. So, I mean, the mix of like participating and then also feeling the Olympic spirit, that's like what I'm the most excited about. And then of course, everyone wants to get a medal. That's just easy. And I had a very interesting chat with Shetlander Almat, who's the, I think he's still the oldest and youngest gold medal winner in alpine skiing on the men's side. And he said something very interesting, which was, he has kind of two tricks, which the first one was, it doesn't matter if you get fourth or 40th, no one's going to remember you. That was his first one.
Nice.
Which is good. It's brutally honest.
Get to the point.
And the second one was that he said, he always did a lot of events, but he said like, when he stood at the start, he felt like he was able to just let go a bit, you know? Maybe he got like, he let go a bit. He got like 3% better. And his biggest competitors, they maybe got like 3% worse. And that difference made him catch the rest. And that's why he was able to win. Because he was just fearless and just didn't think too much. And also had the mentality that it's like, either you're going to get it or you're not. So I think that's some tips I've brought with myself. It's like there are no World Cup points in the Olympics, only medals. And I think that makes it a little bit easier. I was also thinking about that during the World Championships. And I think that's a good way to think of it. And it's also, even though it really feels like it's the end of, or it's the whole world depends on how you do in the moment, I still have, you know, great people at home. And as I've talked about, I have a lot of things to look forward to no matter how I do in the Olympics.
Can you promise me and your fans You won't ski the Super G in the first week of the Olympics?
Yes, actually I can't, because Bormio's Super G is terrifying.
Yeah.
I can't believe those people. I can't believe anyone skis the Super G or downhill there. It's just crazy.
So we've got that promise.
Yeah, I'm not skiing the Super G in Bormio.
Thank you. Okay, there's a relief. We're not going to go through that same story again.
Learn from my mistakes.
And if you can find that magical flow state, if you can come to those Winter Olympic Games the way you skied Wengen, the way you performed in Saalbach, where you lost the gold by 0.02, there's absolutely no reason why Atlee McGrath is not going to be on that podium in the 25th Winter Games.
I guess it's all up to the moment and all up to me when I stand there in the start gate and just being prepared. But I'm super excited. I mean, if we're not excited, then we're doing something wrong. So so I'm very, very excited for it.
I think it's going to be a big Olympics for you.
For sure. Oh, I really hope.
Okay, here we go. Rapid fire is our last section. Then we'll let you on your way. Be as quick as you can with the answer. Don't think about it too much. But right. Here we go.
Yep.
Oslo or Vermont?
Oslo.
Giant slalom or slalom?
Slalom.
Adelboden or Wengen?
Adelboden.
Lucas or River?
Lucas, I've known him the longest for sure.
Okay. Don't worry, River. He loves you as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I love you, River. Yeah, for sure.
Training day or race day?
Training day.
Olympic medal or globe?
Globe.
Fjords or Alps?
Alps.
Golf or basketball?
Golf.
Retro mullet or clean cut?
Retro mullet for sure.
I knew that answer was coming. Night race or sunshine run?
Night race.
Perfect carve or risky attack?
Risky attack.
Formula One or football?
Formula One.
Mott speech or podium speech?
Ooh, Mott speech.
Wisest teammate?
Kilda.
Best teammate prank you've seen?
Dyeing someone's mustache with eyebrow coloring.
Do you want to tell us who that was?
I mean, I've done it, but it was also really fun to do to some other teammates.
Okay. One song that always lifts your mood?
Man in the Mirror, Michael Jackson.
Who wins karaoke night? Timon or Sander?
Ooh, Sander. He's not afraid to go all out.
Favorite Norwegian food?
Waffle.
Mm. Favorite Alpine food?
Alpine food? What's an alpine food?
The food that we get in the mountains, but generally only in the mountains.
Cordon bleu.
Oh. If you could race one course forever, which one would it be?
Alta Badia GS.
The Gran Risa. That podium was special. Atlee, thank you for your honesty, your humour and your Norwegian cool. You bring creativity, heart and personality. You really do to every race. That's exactly what makes this sport special. And to all of our listeners, thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe to Alpine Pulse Unplugged on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and all major platforms. Atlee, that was brilliant. Thank you so much for your time, and may this winter be crackerjack.
I hope so, for sure. Thanks, Nick.
Alpine Pulse is an official podcast of the FIS, produced by Maniac Studios.